A lot of people like to think that love makes the world go round. And of course, there have been many songs written over many years and sung about love making the world go round. One of the earliest was Bob Merrill's theme for the 1961 Broadway musical Carnival. To my mind, most of these songs about love making the world go round have very sentimental and slushy words. And my response to most of them is, yuck. Maybe you don't agree with me. But we know that in reality, the world runs on power. At its foundation has always been wealth, in the form of money or possessions or ownership of land. Power in the more obvious form of military might has too often been a means to obtaining power that wealth in all those forms has always brought. But some people might argue that society needs order and that without the power granted by wealth, there would be no structure and no stability. But the tragedy of power being at the foundation of society is that it legitimizes our use of power at all levels of human relationship. It may be in the workplace, whether in the manufacturing or the service sector. Hierarchies of power are often the norm. Most games and sports involve winning and losing, as of course we're seeing with the Olympics at the moment. In the home, there's been felt a need for there to be a head of the house, particularly perhaps by people who follow some of the teaching of St. Paul. Or the head of the house traditionally has been the husband. Although I'm sure there'll be husbands here and at home that would disagree with that and say, no, it isn't. It is she who must be obeyed. The mother of James and John is therefore quite normal in wanting her sons to have power in the new kingdom. In a royal court, the closer you are to the monarch, the more powerful your position, which is why she asks Jesus if her sons can sit on his right and his left. If her wish is granted, she and all her family will also gain influence, because that's the way of the world. She kneels before Jesus to make her request, and that's the traditional posture of a supplicant in the presence of power. But there's an irony here. While demonstrating faith in the exalted rank of Jesus, she totally misunderstands the nature of his kingdom and assumes it will mirror the earthly use of power. The response of Jesus is at first slightly unexpected and even disappointing. He doesn't rebuke the mother for making her request. Instead, he wonders whether James and John have what it takes to earn such positions of authority. Can they drink of the cup that he will drink? Meaning, will they be able to bear the suffering that he will endure? When they confidently claim that they can, Jesus falls back on the hierarchy that all creation is involved in by saying that such positions in the kingdom. So at first, Jesus doesn't seem to depict the kingdom of heaven as being a hierarchy of power. But when the other disciples react indignantly at the attempt by James and John to grab power, Jesus decides to tell them how it really is. What he says turns the world upside down. If they want to be great, they must learn to be servants. The kingdom's only power is self-giving love. The disciples' hopes of lording it over Israel fade with every word that Jesus speaks. In the lectionary for St. James Day, the Gospel passage from Matthew ends at verses 27 and 28, with Jesus saying, "Whoever wishes to be first among you must be your slave, just as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." But I read on to the end of the chapter, because the last six verses record an incident which I think illustrates what Jesus has just taught. What we have is a replay of the earlier incident. The spiritually blind beggars, James and John, are now replaced by two physically blind beggars. By addressing Jesus explicitly as royalty, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us, their position is far more sincere and honest than that of the mother who was, I think, just trying to curry a favour with Jesus. Now, if Jesus were a worldly Lord, he wouldn't even deign to notice these beggars, but instead he pays them the same respect as he did the disciples, and asks them, as he did her, what they want him to do for them. They want to see. And this is in contrast to the disciples, who didn't want to see the true nature of Jesus' kingdom, but rather to shape it after their own basic desire for power. Filled with compassion, Jesus opens the beggar's eyes as he had opened the disciples' minds. How often are those words, "What can I do for you," our words? Is lordship at the heart of our home life or servanthood? Is there constant vying for power in our church? Think of the LCC and the annual church meeting, trying to get church wardens and people to serve on LCCs, etc. We're probably not vying for power. But overall, is there a vying for power in the church? Is there a vying for power in the workplace if we're still working? Or in the social clubs that we perhaps belong to? Are the people there wanting to get onto the committee to actually run the thing? I can see Richard looking at me and thinking of the Gardening Society. No, that's not the case there. But we do see that happening in social, voluntary run bodies. Do we join in the cutthroat work ethic, or do we stand up for those being exploited? In world affairs, do we try to help those without a voice be heard, or do we leave that for other people to do? I ask that question of myself, and I know I'm guilty of leaving it to other people. Sending off a check or something to support a charity is one thing. Actually getting involved and being a voice and active is something far more positive, I believe. Jesus calls us to turn the world upside down, but it isn't easy. There is a potential hunger for power present in all of us. If we would follow him, as the beggars did on receiving their sight, we need our minds opening. We need to examine our lives in every aspect and ask God to touch us with his grace, which alone can change our hearts, as he changed the hearts of Christ's cup and found greatness in serving the gospel, even unto a martyr's death. The Lord be praised. Amen.